Hi, I'm Brett Johnson, former United States Most Wanted cyber criminal, now good guy, and host of The Brett Johnson Show. Today's episode is episode number 89, David Seymour. It's a prison politics episode, coming up on The Brett Johnson Show. All right, so we are back to today's episode of The Brett Johnson Show. It's number 89. We've got David Seymour joining us. It's a prison politics episode, which means that, yes, David has served prison time. And here's the thing, and I don't know how else to say it other than just simply coming out and saying it, but I am beyond grateful for Matt Cox suggesting that I start talking to former felons. Now, people who have watched the show, who have listened to Prison Politics, you guys know I've told this story before. I tell it to David during the show, and I'm going to tell it one more time. Matt called me one morning. We were giving each other advice, and he says, you know, you really need to be talking to former felons. And I was like, you know, man, I don't want to do that shit, man. I don't want to talk to people who have broken the law and hear them bragging about their crimes or hear them blaming it on anybody else but themselves. I just was not into it. And he's like, well, Brett, you really need to be doing this. And so I started doing some interviews. And I think that I have avoided those fears during this show, during these interviews that I'm doing. I don't think anyone has been bragging about their crimes. I don't think anyone has blamed their choices on anyone else but themselves. And I am beyond grateful for that. I truly am. The people who I've talked to, it looks like this show, if you've not noticed, what I'm doing is, as with interviews, I alternate every week. So one week I'll interview a former felon, prison politics, and then the other week I'll talk to former law enforcement, fraud analyst, cybersecurity individuals, someone like that. And I have this high concept notion that if we can simply get to where we're viewing each other as human beings, that things will change. I think that as a criminal, as a former criminal, I think that if I were to view my victims as simply human beings instead of data across the line or, you know, being able to say I had to do it in order to support myself, I think that if I would have been just able to view them as simple human beings that I was choosing to cause harm to, that it would have been much more difficult for me to perpetrate those crimes. On the law enforcement side, I truly believe that if law enforcement can start to see people who break the law as, you know, just people, as humans who just sometimes make very poor choices, I think it's much harder at that point in time for one of these law enforcement officers that we read about that like to beat somebody up or shoot unarmed black men. I think it's much harder to do that. I think it's much harder to abuse your position of authority if you see the person that you're causing harm to as a human being like yourself. Now, that is a very, I guess that's a very noble notion and a very high concept notion, idea. And it may be something that, it may be something that just won't happen, that you can't attain. But by God, I truly believe that it's worth trying to attain. All right. So that's what this show, that's what the Brett Johnson Show is kind of moving toward. Now I'm doing solo episodes. I'm going to release another solo episode almost immediately at the same time as this one is done because I've got some stuff I want to talk about that's not interview format. So I'm going to continue to do solo episodes, but I'm going to continue to talk to individuals and just try to talk about the humanity of people. David Seymour, former felon, but he's a man who's trying. He wasn't addicted to some substances, and we'll talk about that during the show. At one point, David's going to school. He wants to be a sports broadcaster. And I was like, well, shit, man, you know, hell, you could start a podcast right now. And he was like, well, man, I don't know if I can do that. Well, we talk about it during the show. David took me up on my advice, and he recently launched his YouTube channel. And I'm going to share the screen so we can see this. Let's see, where are you, David? So David Seymour. This is David Seymour's Sports Corner. You see, he's got 10 subscribers. He's just got 3 videos out. But I tell you what, I took the time out. He messaged me as soon as and I'll have the show in the show notes. Sorry, I'm getting a little choked up. The man, he messaged me as soon as he launched the show. And you could tell with the text message that he was ecstatic. He was so fucking happy to have this show up. And he was thanking me for you know, kind of ushering him along. And I immediately went and you know, tuned in to Seymour's Sports Corner. And I got to tell you, here's the thing. He's just starting out. But the man, I think he's going to be really good. I do. He talks about all the games coming up. He talks about the spreads. He gives his thoughts on the teams, on the coaches, everything else. And I got to tell you, he's got a lot of knowledge. He's got a lot of expertise in that. Now, I don't like sports. I'm not a sports guy. If I can find anything else to do other than watch a ball game, I will do that. All right. I'm not a sports guy. David is, and I've watched every single show that David's put out, and I've got to tell you, the man knows his shit. Not only did I watch it, but my youngest stepson, he is nuts on college football. So I listened to David, then I went and just regurgitated everything that David had said to my young son, Carson. And man, I was just spewing that shit out. I said, you want to know the truth? I said, Alabama is not 7 points better than anybody else in the country. Because I think that was the line of the one show one of the shows that I listened to. If you guys don't mind, take a moment. Visit Seymour Sports and give him a sub because it's very humbling to suggest something to someone and they take what you say to heart, and I really appreciate David listening to me and talking to me and just, you know, taking the effort to start his own show. And I wish him nothing but the best. I believe that he is going to be outstanding, not only on his channel with his podcast, his YouTube show, but I think he's going to be outstanding as a sports broadcaster as he continues to grow and everything. That being said, guys, hey, if you guys don't mind, I ask you to subscribe to David's channel. Why don't you subscribe to mine? You certainly don't have to, but if you like the show, if you don't, subscribe. If you like me, if you don't, subscribe. I spent last night, I was listening to, not listening, I had made the mistake of going over to Lex Friedman's episode that I'm on, 272. It's got 5 million views. I'm like, oh my God, all these people have watched the show. The majority of the comments, 90% are very humbling comments. It's about 10% of the people that can't stand Brett Johnson. Hey, if you're one of those that can't stand Brett Johnson, subscribe. Bitch to me in the comments. I'll respond back to you, I promise, unless you're just being a dick. Then I may just block you. But I block very few people. Very few. Anyway, we're going to get started with this show. Y'all, again, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys taking the time out to listen to me. Can't tell you how much I appreciate David Seymour as well. A good guy type thing, you know? And, yeah. A buddy of mine, Matt Cox, he runs the True Crime Channel. He was talking to me. He's like, Brett, you really need to be talking to former criminals. I was like, Matt, man, I don't want to do that shit, man. So what finally got me to do it was I sat down. I was doing a couple interviews and was talking to this guy named Tom Hughes. And we didn't talk about crime so much. We talked about just the story and the prison experience and things mm-hmm. like that. And that hit home with me. So that's the idea of what this show is quickly becoming is showing that people who commit crimes are not, you know, these horrible individuals. We're all human beings at the end of the day. And it's a very short line sometimes, that, right. that gets someone across, you know, that
you know,
criminal activity.
It's funny you say that. You know, I feel like most people don't realize how close they are going to prison on almost a daily basis.
No, I don't think like, they do.
It's ridiculous how thin the line is between being a law-abiding citizen and on your way up the road.
I mean, there's a lot of truth to that, man.
Yeah.
You know, so. And, you know, I see every single day, you know, with the economy, the way it's going and stuff like that. I mean, that line is becoming thinner and thinner. You know, people are worried about paying their bills or mortgage, how they're going to make ends meet, put food on the table and everything else. And, you know, if you've got kids and a family, it don't take much.
Right. Right.
You know,
their little Susie starts crying and holding her stomach and running around barefoot.
Yep. You're going to do what you need to do at that point in time.
Most definitely.
That's it. So David, if you don't mind, we'll get the show started. Usually runs hour, 15 minutes, something like that.
Okay.
I'll have you introduce yourself. Give me some of your background and then we'll just start shooting the shit, man.
Okay.
All right. So let me go ahead and get started here and then I'll introduce you and we'll go from there.
Sounds good.
Hi, I'm Brett Johnson, former United States Most Wanted cyber criminal, now good guy, and host of The Brett Johnson Show. Today's episode, we are talking to David Seymour. That's right, it's a prison politics episode. David, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
I appreciate you for having me.
No, absolutely, man. If you don't mind, introduce yourself to the audience.
I'm David Seymour, 39 years old. I was released from the Florida Department of Corrections on October 21st of 2019. No, 22. I'm sorry.
22, okay.
21. Jeez. Getting all mixed up. I did it almost 3 years.
Okay.
My sentence was 3 years. I got all of my gang time. Florida makes you do 85%. So my original release date was October 12th, but I had a, violation of probation detainer on me.
Okay.
So as I got released from prison, I was being taken into custody by Clay County here.
Right.
I had to go stand and allow them to say time served. So I did another 7 or 8 days in Clay County jail while I was waiting on that. So.
That county time ain't no fun, man.
No, I'd much rather do prison time if I'm going to do any time.
Yeah. So what'd you get charged for, if you don't mind my asking?
What I was on probation for the detainer, I had a battery on a Leo and fleeing and eluding. And then what I actually, the charges that took me to prison that I violated that probation with was trafficking of methamphetamines. And then we had a bunch of different drugs on us.
Right.
We were there to make a meth sale. And we had all of the drugs that we were using and selling on us. And so when they busted us, it was a setup from the get-go, confidential informant. So... some other guy that didn't want to go to prison decided to send us instead. So,
well, yeah, I mean, that happens. You get charged with conspiracy, all that good stuff or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw one of the things. I served 7.5 in federal and we had a lot of guys on conspiracy for ghost dope. You know, you get just two people in the federal system say you got it. You've got it at that point.
Right.
And that's it. So how was the Florida system down there?
Really, it's horrible. Very short staffed. There's not a whole lot of programs and stuff to better yourselves. Not a lot of education at all. I know they've started, as I was getting out, they were starting to ramp some of that up and allowing the guys to start going to college and stuff. And a lot of the programs that they do have, if you're a short timer, you don't qualify for them. You have to have X amount of years to even enter into the program. So, you know, I sat around and twiddled my thumbs pretty much for my 3 years.
Were you at what level of security were you?
I was maximum.
Maximum.
But everything's pretty much the same in Florida for the most part. The only thing that changes is if say you beat up a CO or you've had too many times that you've killed or stabbed or fought somebody, then they'll put you on I'm at a loss for closed confinement.
Right.
And then you go off and do the two-man cell thing. But for the most part, unless you're in a private prison, Florida's all open bay.
Now,
so,
had you been in trouble before or not? Had you ever been locked up before?
Not for anything serious. I think I had a petty theft when I was like 15, and I had a ex-wife that wrote a hot check one time. And I think I got arrested once for not paying my child support, being behind on my child support during the recession. But as far as any kind of prison time, I hadn't been into any of that. So I grew up all over the place. My dad was in the Navy. We were constantly moving around. When we moved to Jacksonville, for some reason here in Jacksonville, Florida, I just really felt like that this was home.
Right.
And, you know, my travels throughout my adult life took me all over the place. But my whole time I was trying to get back here.
Okay.
And in 2017, me and a girlfriend that I'd met up in Ohio that was from Jacksonville moved back. And I was pretty struck off in the throes of addiction. You know, I was real bad alcoholic and, you know, cocaine, really anything I could get my hands on.
Were you addicted
to
meth too or not?
Almost definitely. Okay. I started using meth probably 2006 or so. And I'd got off of it for a long time. You know, every once in a while, I'd find it at a party or something and do some. But for the most part, I'd been off of it. When I came back here in 2017, it just, my addiction hit a whole new road, you know. And that's how I ended up with the battery on the Leo. Funny story is I didn't, like, fight the guy or anything. I was being strapped to a gurney because as soon as I started getting arrested, I was looking for the reason why I was going to get off, you know? So I start pulling the insanity thing, you know, just going crazy. I'm hearing voices, all of that shit. So they take me to the hospital and strap me to a gurney and they're trying to sedate me. And I start struggling and the cop comes over to help hold me down. And I accidentally kick him in the midst of the struggle and they charged me with the battery on the Leo, you know? And that's really where my first felony came from. It is, but it sticks, you know, and especially in a place like Clay County, Florida, where, you know, they don't have body cams on. They don't have, not all of their vehicles are equipped with dash cams. So even the fleeing and eluding, I didn't even realize the cop was behind me. You know, I was taken off from my house, pissed off. I didn't realize there was a substation right around the corner.
Right.
So when the cop shows up, I don't even see him behind me. I'm taken off, pissed off. Stop to buy a pack of cigarettes and get yanked out of the car, you know? Right. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't know anybody that's ran from the cops that decided to stop at the 7-Eleven two blocks up the road to buy a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, you usually don't pull that shit. Right. you go start going, you keep going.
Right, you don't stop. So, you know, like, my first felon.
They're going to have to cause me to wreck or something.
Right. Better bring out the strips.
That's,
you know?
It. That's
but,
it.
But, you know, so my first felonies were really bullshit felonies, you know, and I had a bullshit public defender, you know, and all he cared about doing was hurrying up and getting me along the way, you know?
Right. Right. Let me ask you something, David, because this is kind of weighing on me, man. I've never used meth or cocaine or anything else like that.
Uh-huh.
I had a stripper chick girlfriend / fiance, but boy, she liked the cocaine pretty well, but I never tried it or anything. What is the, what's the attraction to meth or cocaine? I mean, what does that make you feel like when you do that?
It's you're amped up, but you're, you know, all of your life's problems, everything that you've got going on is like so far from your mind. As much as your mind's racing and your heart's racing and your whole body's amped up, that's the last thing you can think about. You know, I'm stuck off in true crime shows, or I'm watching, you know, whatever the latest alien UFO sighting is, or I'm, you know, I'm all over the place, but I'm everywhere but where my problem is.
I got you.
You know, and that's what drugs and alcohol were for me. And the biggest attraction to meth and cocaine for me is I'm an alcoholic by nature.
Okay. Like,
and I have a severe allergy to alcohol, as in that I need as much of it as I possibly can get.
I got you.
And it keeps you from getting too drunk, right? I don't black out. I don't lose control. I can just keep drinking.
So it just tapers that shit off so you just keep going with it.
Most definitely.
I got you. So did you know that you were becoming addicted to these substances, or did just one day you just kind of realized it?
I think somewhere back in my mind, I knew that I was addicted, you know, but it's not something anybody ever wants to admit. You always want to think that you have control of it, that you have it under wraps. You know, you're doing the drug. The drug's not doing you, you know?
Right, right.
And so after I caught those first felonies, the girlfriend that I was with brought me back into the house, you know, told me that I had to go to AA if I wanted to stay in the house, you know? And And I didn't. I had no interest in being sober. I had an interest in keeping a roof over my head, you know, but I heard enough there to be able to recognize what I really had, even if I wasn't willing to admit it at that point, you know. And the one thing about my trip to prison is, as shitty as the actual Florida prison system is, you know, I met a guy in there that was sober and sober in prison and had worked the steps of a 12-step program. And he took me through that, you know, and I was able to find freedom inside of that facility before I ever walked out, you know, and it has blessed me in, you know, I stay in a 12-step program and I work through that. And, you know, I'm a very active member and all of that. And my life's been amazing since I've got out.
So how many days clean are you now?
Oh, I couldn't tell you days. I celebrated 4 years, March 28th.
Outstanding, man. Outstanding. So, congratulations. Now, is that why you started dealing in the meth and everything, was to support the habit?
Oh, most definitely. So I was on those first set of felonies. My first sentence was 1 year of community control, which is house arrest here, but it was without an ankle monitor. They have two levels here, and the level I was on was without an ankle monitor. And they violated me on my last day of house arrest.
Ah.
And they had every reason to violate me. I was able to, through some loopholes and stuff, prove that the PO wasn't doing her job. But they had every right to violate me. And I spent 60 days in the Clay County Jail on that violation. I ended up pleading guilty to it so I could get out 2 days before my probation hearing.
Right.
So I could go out and start using. But I didn't have any money. I'd been in there for 60 days. My card gotten repoed, and I just happened to wander into a hotel room with some chick that was selling some of the best meth that I'd had in my entire life. And I just thought, well, I can make some money on this. The problem with that is I was making just enough money to keep using, you know? Right. So it was a vicious cycle. And the truth of it is, you know, thanks be to God, but I was only out of that county jail for 24 days before I got set up on the, you know, I didn't have much time to get really heavy back into it. So I still had kind of was able to get myself right while I was in.
So when you got, how long did you spend in county jail?
Oof. See, I got charged March 28th and shipped off to county jail, I want to say right at the beginning of July, end of June.
Okay. So you got a good taste of county.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
County is absolutely the worst possible time I believe anyone could ever do in the system.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's horrible.
It's horrible.
Were you in an open pod or was it, did you have cells or what?
It was kind of those in Baker County, which is where I got busted, they did have two-man cells. Everything else in Florida is pretty much open bay. Clay County's all open bay. Duval County does have some cells and some open bay, but.
Right.
Florida does a lot of open bay. So
why don't you talk to me about, you know, you'd never really been in any, you know, serious trouble. So mm-hmm. when you got in that trouble and when you went in, what was your thinking process at that point? What were you feeling? What were you thinking?
Truthfully, because I was so old when I went in, mm-hmm. you know, the only thing I could think is that I have to find a way to be different when I get out. You know, I've got to find a way to be a different person than the one that's walking in here, because, you know, time my kids were just starting high school, you know, I managed to work out a deal that was going to allow me to be out in time to be there for graduation. And all I could think about was I've got to find a way to be a different person, you know? And again, I'd been exposed to 12-step programs and stuff before I ever went in.
Right.
And I didn't think that was even an option. If anybody knows anything about a 12-step program, the level of openness and in depth of who you are and what you've done has right. to come out, you know, and you've been to prison. Anything that anybody decides to share about you does not stay in that spot, right?
It absolutely does not.
If I get transferred, it follows with me. There's somebody from that camp that's going to the next camp with me, right. or there's a way for them to get that information there, whether it be cell phones. But I think for me also going in, you know, I'd seen plenty of all the prison shows, you know, 60 Days In or, you know, whatever the different reality TV shows of prison are. And so I was wondering what to expect, you know, and Florida's a little bit different than any other state. You know, you got, I've lived in Texas and I knew many a convict that came out of Texas prisons. And I know many of people that came out of California state prisons, you know, and they talk about the racial divide, and Florida's so much different because you've got whites that are in black gangs and it's kind of all mixed up. And so it wasn't as bad as what I thought it was going to be.
So you didn't, you know, you weren't approached by any gangs or anything like that when you went in?
I was approached by the white boy gang, I guess you would say. They're called the Unforgiven here in Florida.
See, I've not heard of them. I served time with Dirty White Boys, the Peckerwoods, the Aryan Brotherhood, and Aryan Nation. So I served time with.
Yeah. Well, in Texas, I knew a couple of guys that were Aryan Circle, and I've heard of Aryan Brotherhood and Crazy White Boys and all of that. But apparently whoever these Unforgiven guys are, they've kind of shut down anybody else operating inside of the state of Florida. So they approached me, and really when it came down to it, you know, I wasn't interested for one, obviously. Right. You know, that's not who I am. I grew up in military family on bases. You know, I've been integrated my entire life and never knew anything different. So to try to segregate myself at this point was dumb. But the other part of it is I didn't have long enough on my sentence. When they found out how much time I had on my sentence, I was of no use to them.
Right.
You know, and I knew I had a insight to gang life before I ever came in. You know, like I said, being out in Texas, I knew a bunch of Aryan Circle guys that were coming out of Texas prison and working in the oil field with me. And, you know, to see how they handled each other and how they spoke to each other and all of that, it was never something that was very appealing to.
Right. Right.
You know?
So you have any difficulties that you had from not joining the gang or anything like that?
No. And like I said, from what I heard while I was inside, you know, especially from guys that were from other states that were in Florida prisons, is that Florida prison is so much different. Like the way things operate in there would not be allowed anywhere else in the in the US. So that being said, you know, it really wasn't, you know, me keeping my nose clean helped keep that. I knew a lot of people that did have lots of troubles. You know, the big thing is drugs.
Right.
You know, when I got out, there were people that told me my clean time didn't count because I was in prison. And I'm like, hold on, you have no idea how easy it is to get high. And everybody knows how to cook alcohol, and there's sugar everywhere. Right. So, you know, there's that. There's alcohol everywhere. And then, you know, between guards and everything else, drugs run fluent in there. You know, the biggest thing for me in Florida was, you know, they keep talking about taking away contact visits. And I know a lot of states have already done that, but we still have contact visits. And they're talking about taking that away because that's how the drugs are coming in. Right. I was in prison during COVID, right? Complete lockdown, no visitation, nobody from the outside, nobody but staff members, no drugs, teachers, no in. Schools. Man, more drugs in there than there were before COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. Drugs still coming in. Right. Wonder how they're getting in there.
I don't know.
Got some drugs, ideas, though.
Drugs, cell phones, all of it. It was, it seemed like it was easier to get during COVID than what it was before COVID.
Right. So what caused you to want to change things around? Was it the prison experience? Was it something other than that? I mean, what caused you? Because I mean, you were an addict for a long time.
Most definitely.
So what causes David to make the choice to do the right damn thing?
You know, when I went in front of that judge and I got my bond, it was like $250,000, something like that. At this point in time, I've burned every bridge. So even if it was $5,000, I'm not getting out. You know, I knew with the charges that I was going to prison. And, you know, for a long time, I'd hung my hat on the fact that no matter how much I'd screwed my life up, you know, I've been married 3 times, divorced 3 times. I have 2 kids by 2 different women that are 6 months and 16 days apart. You know, I mean, my life has not been peachy fucking king, you know, and I've always felt like the black sheep of my family. But the one thing I could always hold my hat on was that I'd never been to prison and never convicted of a felony. Well, then I got convicted of the felonies, and then, you know, little over a year later, I'm on my way to prison on a different set of felonies, you know, and I don't know. I honestly don't know. I know that before I got arrested on the felonies that sent me to prison, before I got arrested on the drug charges, you know, I was in a bad way. My sister wanted me to do some counseling with her pastor, and she tricked me. I mean, she tricked me good. She brings me out there to the counseling. I get done with the counseling, and I'm like, yeah, I think I'll let this guy counsel me. He's a pretty cool dude. I said, are we ready to go? And she's like, no, there's a Bible study afterwards. And I said, oh. And the whole premise on this was, you know, you come and at least meet with him this one time, and I'll buy you some groceries and buy you some cigarettes, you know?
Right.
And I'm a fucking addict. If you're going to offer me free anything,
of course,
I'll jump through whatever hoop it is that you ask me to jump through, you know? But during the course of this Bible study, they're talking about the gifts of the Spirit, you know, and regardless of what you believe, these gifts are listed in the Bible, right? And, you know, speaking in tongues, interpreting tongues, all of these different things. And I've never been a huge believer in those things in this world. You know, I feel like that they were of the yesteryear. We can't quiet ourselves enough to receive those anymore. Right. But that's what he was trying to do. He was doing this guided meditation and received those. I'm not going to tell you that I received any gift or anything like that, but what I did have happen was have this overwhelming calmness come over me, and I felt like somebody wrapped me in their arms and said everything's going to be okay. Well, I didn't hear the words, but it almost felt like no matter what, everything's going to be okay.
Right.
You know, and a few short days later, I'm on my way to prison, and I don't know, that experience along with the fact that at 34 years old, I'm going to prison. You know, I've lived this entire life, you know, I've made $100,000 or more a year a couple of times in my life working out in the oil field. You know, I've got all of these people that love and care about me, whether I can see it or not,
right.
You know, and, you know, I did a lot of things wrong in trying to start this healing process, you know, and I got into a writing letters argument with my parents about how it was their fault that I was in prison, you know, and through the process of these 12 steps that I worked, you know, I learned how to do that the correct way. And, you know, I just knew I had to be different. The other part of it is I heard too many stories of this becomes the pattern. Right. And it wasn't like I heard these stories on TV. I've heard these stories from people in person. I've known people whose life were one day they went to prison and then they got out. And because it's so hard to get out, it just became a revolving door for them until they were there for life.
Right.
You know, and I got kicked out of the Navy because I couldn't conform to the Navy's rules. You know, they gave me an administrative separation. Their exact words were, you cannot conform to the Navy way, and the Navy's not going to conform to your way. You know, I'm not built for prison because I'm not built to be in a place where somebody's got control of my everyday life, right. You know? And I knew it was going to be like that for a couple of years, but I knew I had to make sure that I wasn't ever going to go back, you know?
I mean, it makes sense. It does. It makes sense.
And the truth of the matter is that while I was in, you know, I saw plenty of examples of that. The second camp I ever went to, I was there for like 3 weeks. I'm in a dorm. This guy goes to have his physical to get ready to leave. Next thing we know, every security officer is on their way up to medical to take him to confinement. He was 55, 60 years old. He was homeless, had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
In Florida, they put you, after your second time in prison, they put you on what's called CRD. So you have to do the rest of your good time, whatever, you know, you do 85% of your time in prison. And then the other 15% you do on an ankle monitor outside of prison.
Okay.
And so this was probably his third time in. So he's going on CRD, but he has nowhere to go, nowhere to live. They're going to drop him off in a tent city with $50.
Jesus.
It is local, whatever town it is that he came from. They're going to drop him off at a tent city with $50.
Right.
And
and he'd been locked up forever by that point.
Probably, you know, even if he hadn't been in that long at that time, this was his third time in. So he's been locked up.
Yeah.
So he goes up to medical and he slaps a nurse so that he can get more time because he does not want to leave.
We had a guy in Fort Worth And he was, I mean, he was, you know, 60, 70 years old. He had served, you know, 30 years for bank robbery. And they had to chase his ass down to get him. They kept calling him over the intercom, and he wouldn't go to R&D to be discharged. So they finally came and got his ass, set him outside of the gate. The guy walks down the hill, walks into a bank, robs the bank, comes outside, just sits down on the sidewalk outside of the bank waiting for the cops to come get him because he had no place to go.
Jeez.
So, yeah, it's screwed up.
Well, and I think it's our system as a whole that fails us as we get out, right?
Yeah.
We go in and it's to pay a debt to society. And then we get out and that debt follows us around.
You're right.
You know, I currently live with my girlfriend, but I'm not allowed to be on her lease, right? Because right. I'm a convicted felon.
Right.
You know, there's certain every job that I go to, I have to fill out that, you know, I'm a convicted felon.
What kind of work do you do now, David?
I currently build retractable screens in a warehouse. It's just a production job, but I just started school. My dream's always been to become a sports broadcaster.
Sweet. You got the voice for it.
Yes. Ever since I was 10 years old, you know, I remember growing up, my dad wouldn't even watch a football game with me because I had all the information out of my mouth. And then he had to listen to it on repeat because the actual guy's getting paid to do it.
That sounds like my stepson right there.
You know, so I just enrolled in Full Sail University in their bachelor's sports broadcasting program. So I just started class. Was it Monday? So
when will those classes be finished?
They said it's about 2.5 years.
Okay.
The cool thing though is that part of my tuition is they give us this project launch box. It comes with all the equipment that I would need to do the class, which a lot of it's going to be, you know, simulating sports broadcasting stuff.
Right.
And they're going to teach you how to like do what you're doing, produce a podcast and all right. of that. So I'm hoping to be able to, within the next 6 months or so, get my own podcast started and at least get my foot in the door doing it that way.
Dude, I like it. I like it a lot. And I got to tell you, a podcast, YouTube channel, absolutely. Get that damn thing off the ground. Start it as soon as you possibly can. If you need any type of advice or anything like that, I'm more than happy to help you with that, to hook you up with other people that I know, everything else.
Cool. I'd really appreciate that.
So have you had, I know you said you're working, doing retractable screen right now, but did you have a lot of trouble finding a job once you got out?
You know, I got lucky. This company that I'm working for, I actually left and came back, but they were the first place that I walked into apply at, and they're just really cool people, right? All they wanted to make sure that I didn't have any sex charges. You know, they've got women that bring their kids around, you know, but other than that, you know, there's a guy in there that did 25 years for murder, you know, that's working there. So, you know, the places are out there. They're just hard to find. You know, you get the list from your local probation office and all it has on there is like Wendy's and McDonald's and places you can't actually make a livable living at.
Exactly.
You know, so the places are out there. You just got to search for them. And for me, the biggest thing for me is that I'm upfront about it all when I go in. You know, that's one of the first things that I want to discuss because I want to get that elephant out of the room. Out of the way. I don't want you to get it on my background report, you know, and see the list of charges and not know anything about who I am as a human being or why those charges, you know, very open about my addiction in there, you know, in a job interview, just for the simple fact that not that it excuses my behavior and excuses me going to prison, but it is a reason why I went, you know, and the fact that I am not living that life anymore would dictate that those consequences aren't going to happen anymore. You got
a pretty good relationship with your girlfriend and everything now?
Oh man, this first relationship I've ever been in that I've been in over a year and not had a single argument.
I would say that's a pretty damn good relationship.
Yeah. She's an amazing woman, man.
What about your sister, man? The one that did the counseling and the Bible study after that. How's she?
Oh yeah. She's great. You know, for a lot of my siblings, man, I've caused a lot of pain in my family, you know, so it's not we're going to barbecue every weekend or anything like that, but they definitely check in on me, make sure I'm doing okay. You know, I went over and had dinner with her a couple of times, you know, she wishes me a happy birthday, you know, so the greatest thing is the relationship that I have with my parents and my kids at this point, you know.
Good relationship.
Great relationship. My good. Son's trying to hurry up and finish school so he can come out here and move in with me.
Where's your son now?
He's in San Diego, California right okay. now. So, and then I've got a daughter that lives up in Michigan, you know, and it's real tricky with her because me and her mom were at such odds, you know, that probably only seen her, you know, three times for maybe 8 hours total in her entire life before right. A couple of weeks ago, she invited me up there to be a part of her graduation party. You know, the one thing that, you know, before I went into prison, you know, I told my public defender at the time, I said, man, I have to be out in time to see my kids graduate, you know, and he made that happen. And then God allowed it to actually come to fruition.
There you go.
You know, and she's going to come down. She's never met my parents. So we're all going to meet at my parents' place on Labor Day. So get to hang out with her again all weekend. So
I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah, I was, you know, you said you heard a lot of people. I was the same way, man. I mean, I heard a lot of people. And, you know, when you try to make those amends, some of them are open to it. And some of them you've caused so much damage that, by God, they're right. not open to it anymore. And
no, you're absolutely right.
Now, it's a sad thing. It is. It's,
it
weighs on me every single day. It truly does. And you sound like you're pretty much the same way there.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah. I think you're going to be a great sportscaster. I really do.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I wish
you
get
that podcast off the ground as soon as you possibly can, too.
I sure will.
All right. I do want to ask you, here's the funny thing. I come from Eastern Kentucky.
Okay.
So I've been looking for, scouring Facebook, trying to find a deep miner, coal deep miner, to interview for that type of work. And I served time out in Big Spring, Texas.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't live very far from that. I lived in Odessa, Midland.
You said oil fields, I was like, well, hell, I want to ask this guy what it's like to work in the oil fields.
It's getting different and it's getting more different every day. I couldn't tell you what it's like right now.
Well, when you were there, what was it like?
Man, it was rough. I remember the first job I ever had in 2004. Was it 2004? No, it was probably 2006, 2007.
Okay.
How
old are you now?
I'm 39 now.
39. All right.
Yeah. So I probably got started in my early 20s. First driller I ever worked for, Greg Ehrenberg, man, he was a hoot, but he had a breathalyzer in his vehicle. Somebody in the crew had to stay sober through the night so we could blow for him so we could drive to work in the morning, you know, and that's the way it was. You know, we had safety meetings. So we called them out back behind the mud pits and we'd go out there and smoke joints and, you know, we'd drink on the way to work and on the way home from work. And,
right.
You know, we'd meet up at the bar and drink all night. You know, the oil field used to be, and I don't know that it is anymore, but it used to be a lifestyle. You know, it wasn't a career. It wasn't a job. It was a lifestyle. You know, our motto was fuck, fight, trip, pipe, you know, and it was, and that's just the life we led, you know, right. It's the third most dangerous job in all of the world. You know, I've seen guys spiral fracture their arms, throwing a spinning chain. I think most rigs have gotten rid of the spinning chain by now. You know, I knew a guy that got crushed by the blocks.
Right.
The whole traveling block assembly came crashing to the ground.
Jesus.
Crushed the guy. You know, I stood in a derrick tripping pipe one night out in Fort Stockton, Texas. Mm-hmm. And we called it a mini city. There was, I mean, everywhere you looked, all you could see was drilling rigs. The whole ranch was lit up with drilling rig lights.
Right.
And I watched a rig burn to the ground while I was standing in the derrick, not more than a mile away from, you know, it's such a dangerous job and you spend so much time out there. So much time away from your family.
Worried or scared or anything?
There were a couple of times where I worked for a couple of, and I usually didn't last long if I was scared of you. You know, the guy, Greg Ehrenberg, the first guy that I ever worked with, you know, for as much of a hoot as he was, he went 20 years as a driller running a rig, over 20 years without a recordable accident, you know? So my first experience in, very impressive. My first experience in there, I got to see what safe work looked like, you know?
Right.
And we didn't have all the safety rules and regulations that they have now. We had a lot of them, but we didn't have all of them, you know, and, but we used common sense and we knew how to make things work. You know, you hear about a lot of these accidents, and I feel like most of the accidents that you hear about out there are because they're so over safety, right? They've got a safety man out there that's constantly breathing down your neck. And you're so worried about whether or not you're breaking a procedure and going to get written up, you can't think about how to actually do your job.
Right.
You know, and we didn't have that out there when I first started. And so it was just common sense. And it was one guy looking out for the next.
Right.
You know, making sure you weren't, you know, and there was a lot of hazing. You know, right. I had guys.
Well, that's men, you know, for you, though.
Right. You know, there was trying to lift a 100-pound sack of mud over your head and some guy cuts it open with the knife, and there's another guy there with a water hose to spray you down because that shit's so thick you can't ever get it off. You know, I mean, sending guys in the middle of the night to go look for a key to a V door, and the V door is just a big ass ramp, right? So you send him to the tool pusher shack where he's dead asleep, you know, to go find this V door key, you know, or pipe stretchers, or you know, just all the dumb stuff that you'd find anywhere else, you know,
right.
But man, it, like I said, it was a lifestyle, man. And it, yeah. It's still in my, there's parts, you know, I shattered my wrist working for a young driller, you know, didn't really understand what he was doing. And, we were making a connection and the guy missed putting the pin end in the box and he kind of set it on the edge and wasn't watching what he was doing and just kept coming down.
Ah.
And that thing slingshotted off and slammed my wrist into another piece of iron. Man, it was bad enough that when the doctor looked at the x-rays, asked me what the fuck I did, he didn't know how he was going to fix it, you know, Jesus, and dude. He got it fixed. I mean, right. great doctor, but, you know, that kind of slowed my career path down a little bit. And I ended up going off in a different part of the oil field and doing some different things that weren't as physical.
Right.
And
how long were you in the eventually?
Right about 13 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So did you do, I guess you did every bit of work that was to be done in the fields or not?
Well, no, I mainly did drill and rig. I did some well servicing was the first thing that I did after okay. The well's been drilled and they're pumping oil on it. You go out and fix rods and tubing that's inside of it. Okay. And then I drilled more than I did anything.
How hard is that job?
It's real hard, man. Every piece of pipe that you handle is, you know, 33 foot long,
it's right.
20 pounds per foot. You know, when you're moving them around, a lot of times you're moving them around three at a time yeah. as they're waving through the air. You know, there's just so much that goes into it and so many moving pieces and so many things that have to be absolutely right and perfect. And, you know,
and you're in West Texas doing that shit.
Yeah.
Let's not discount that. Yeah.
Right. So 120 degrees in the summer, you know, 20 degrees in the winter, wind yeah. that's blowing 1,000 miles an hour, you know, so.
Yeah. About the, you know, that was my experience too. About the only real positive out there were those sunsets, man. With that dust in the air like that. Jesus, those are beautiful.
They are.
You know.
You know, and there's part of me, that's something that'll forever be in my blood. You know, there's times that I miss it. And it's not something that I couldn't go back and do, but
right.
just the long hours away from the family. And, you know, the money's fabulous.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, the money makes it worth it. You know, the problem is that it's such an up and down industry, you know.
Now, do you live on site or not?
There were times that I worked for companies where I lived on site. And then there were other times that I just worked an 8-hour tower and, you know, went home at the end of the day. And I preferred those. And that's probably a reason I'll never go back is, you know, I've tried my entire life to get back to Jacksonville, Florida. And I'm here, I'm by the beach, you know, I've been a beach bum my whole life, you know, so.
Even on your worst day, you've got the water.
Most definitely, you know, and living out in West Texas, it's a 2.5-hour drive to the nearest body of water.
Oh yeah.
You
know? Oh yeah.
You know, there's no natural lakes or anything that occur in Texas. Right. Every lake's man-made. They've got a couple of rivers, but you know, the only oceans out in Houston and Corpus Christi. And those are some, some rough areas for the most part.
Those are some rough areas. They certainly are.
You know, I love my little slice of heaven here in Jacksonville. So, the only chance I have of moving is if ESPN offers me a contract. I'll be in Bristol, Connecticut so fast.
Well, dude, I'm telling you what you need to do, get that podcast going, get you some guests, you know, do what I started out was a one man show. Now I'm doing the interviews, but stay true to yourself. All right. Don't try to copy anybody else at all. Be you. And people will gravitate to that. It's when you start trying to act like other or imitate other people that people they sense that falsehood. But as long as you're true to yourself and always stay that way, you'll be a success. I have no doubt. You've got the voice for it. You've got the personality for it. I've got nothing but high hopes for you.
I appreciate it.
All right. Well, David. All right. So that was episode number 89 of the Brett Johnson Show. David Seymour. David, I want to thank you again so much for coming on the show. I wish you absolutely nothing but the best. Everyone that's taking the time out to listen today, hey, thank you all so much. I always ask for you guys to subscribe to my channel, wherever you may listen to, Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, YouTube, what have you. And yes, I would like you to do that. But look here, truthfully, if you're going to subscribe to any channel today, I would really appreciate it if you would take the time out to subscribe to Seymour's Sports Corner, whether you like sports or not. You may love the shit out of sports, like my youngest son. You may be crazy over that bullshit, and you may find you love everything that David Seymour is saying. All right, subscribe. You may find that you disagree with every single thing that David Seymour is saying. Well, subscribe and bitch to him about it in the comment section. All right, that way he'll be forced to respond back, and you all can get in some little tiff and argue sports, which I don't give a shit about. So subscribe if you don't like sports. If you don't like sports, understand this is a man that he's trying to better himself. He truly is. So if you could just take a moment out to just subscribe to the show, I would appreciate it. I think it's more important to subscribe to his show than it is to sub to mine. And I'm not going to say anything else other than that. All right. I'm going to say, hey, thank you guys for taking the time to tune in. We're going to close the show out the same way we close it out every single day. How do we do that? We say, stay safe out there. Stay secure. And stay vigilant. I think some people, we kind of overlook that last part of staying vigilant. Be aware of your surroundings. You know, we're very good in the physical world of knowing when we're in a bad neighborhood. We take that wrong turn and we're like, oh, shit, lock the doors, roll up the windows. For some reason, we're not very vigilant in our online lives. But we need to be that way. We need to understand that there are predators that lurk in those online waters. You know, that doesn't mean to be paranoid. Lord knows I've got some friends and they are absolutely paranoid, scared to death to do much of anything. We don't need to live our lives like that. So don't be paranoid. Don't be scared. I like the idea of trusting but verifying everything. Be vigilant. I think if you just are aware that in these, I don't care what the platform is, there's predators on every single platform. If you're aware of that, that will increase your overall awareness, and you'll be much less susceptible to being scammed or defrauded or stolen from or what have you. So stay safe, stay secure, stay vigilant. More importantly, understand this is the Brett Johnson Show. At the end of the day, just do the right damn thing. I'm Brett Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.